If you've been getting that sinking feeling at the supermarket, you know when you tap your card, it's going to be brutal. Today, I'm sitting down with Chef Alice Taylor to talk food hacks that actually work to save you money at checkout.
Absolutely, cheap food can be good for you. Food's expensive. People are feeling that all over the world. And I just don't think that that's right.
You might know her from MasterChef. She's also worked at some of the best restaurants in the country. But now she's bringing those skills to the rest of us. Today we're talking about $1.50 bread, 20 cent noodles, chocolate cake that costs less than a coffee, and none of it feels like deprivation.
That's the point of the book, is trying to help people sort of feed their families in a really tough economic time.
This is actually good food. Because it doesn't matter what you earn. Pretty much everyone I know has been wide-eyed at the cost of food lately. It's where the cost of living crisis has been hitting the hardest. From a little kitchen in Auckland, she's helping families all over the world do more for less. So, welcome to Making Sense, because today we're bringing some comfort back to the kitchen. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Here's what I like about Alice. She doesn't just write recipes. She reverse engineers them. She prices them out. She tests them. And she refuses to rely on fake foods or impossible ingredients. But she's also not afraid to talk about the bigger issues here.
Something needs to be done at a higher level to address the fact that it's becoming really difficult, and it is difficult for families to feed themselves. I just don't think that that's right.
So today we're getting into how she designs affordable meals that still feel special, the psychology of pride over perfection in the kitchen, and why a few simple base recipes can completely change how far your grocery dollar goes. If you want great tasting food for a fraction of the price, this is the episode for you. Alice Taylor, chef, welcome back. We had you on before we upgraded the set, and now you have this amazing new project. So I had to get you back in to A, show off the new setup.
It's beautiful.
But also, cost of living crisis cookbook. Talk about the cookbook for our times. And I did get a sneak peek at the recipes, and they all look amazing.
Thank you.
What I really love is how you priced everything out. Everything has got next to it, price per serve. And this is one of those things that, I mean, I talk about money all the time and I love food.
Yeah.
You'd think I would do better about this. I struggle at this. When you were going through and pricing things out, what made you think about this is a way I can actually help people at the moment?
Well, I think for me with the pricing, I've always priced the recipes that I've done on Instagram. And I think it's really important when people go into sort of wanting to cook a recipe, they understand how much it's actually going to cost them, especially today. So I guess the purpose of the cookbook was everything is priced low. They know with full transparency, you know, the approximate cost. Obviously, there's going to be differences in the season, but the approximate cost, and also that the book is accessible to as many people as possible. So that's also why the book is priced really well, in my opinion, at $12. We just wanted to consider price all throughout the whole entire thing. That's the point of the book, is trying to help people sort of feed their families in a really tough economic time. Mm. And it's hard. It is actually genuinely really hard to consistently cook affordable food. So we wanted to make sure that we consider all of that. And everyone knows going into every recipe how much it's going to cost, give or take a few dollars, and just go in with confidence.
Yeah. And I love that you've got beautiful, simple recipes. I was saying to you before that I am definitely going to make the brownie. I'm super keen. But, you know, these beautiful, simple foods, and then it all priced out. And I think this is where your chef background helps. I mean, there's all sorts of people who are into food and share their skills, and I love that. But I feel like the pricing of things is a really core chef skill. How do you go through? Are there any sort of staples that help you keep prices low?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the chefing, 100%, it's taught me how to sort of price things, in the sense that chefing, hospitality is low profit margins often, so you have to be really strict on that, especially when it comes to allergies. And that's where I learned a lot about substitutes, because often you'll have people coming into the restaurant with an egg allergy, with a gluten allergy or whatever, nut allergy, and you have to think on your feet, use what you have, which is usually just kind of the staples, and then go from there. So that's what kind of taught me how to think about allergies. But with the substitutes, for me, I kind of look at, and again, I guess it comes from being a pastry chef, a lot of those ingredients that have increased in price are those sort of pastry basics. So butter, oil is just as good. In professional kitchens, you will always use, almost always use oil instead of butter in cakes, because actually the texture is better anyway. Mm-hmm. It also happens to be cheaper. So with oil, you want to cut the quantity down by about 25% to butter. And then you've got your other substitutes like eggs, for example. You can use a grated apple. You can use flax seeds or chia seeds mixed. Sometimes you can use a mashed banana. A lot of it's come from trial and error, just figuring out substitutes. I've done a lot of baking and it hasn't worked out, or a lot of cooking and I've thought, oh, that's weird. But then eventually you kind of learn, and you learn as you go, and you can come up with some good substitutes. So they're all throughout the book. And also with every recipe, we've tried to, as much as possible, offer substitutes throughout it all. So I never want anyone to feel like when they open the book, they have to basically go out to the supermarket. They can just cook with whatever they have, within reason, of course. If you've got any sugar, syrup, an apple instead of an egg, a pear, it doesn't matter. You can cook from the book. That's really important to me.
Yeah, I've got to say, I love that you have so many substitutes, because I've talked about this before, your apple muffins.
Yes.
We'll have to link the recipe or something in the show notes, because that is absolutely 18-month-old approved in my house.
I love it.
That is, he likes to start his day with a muffin. So we'll often, to mix it up, add in some blueberries. That is not cost of living approved, but we do keep them frozen to try and balance.
Yeah, nice, nice. I love it.
Raisins, that is cost of living approved. He just mix things up, but he loves himself starting off the day with a muffin. But everyone in my house except for me has food allergies.
That's
so annoying. All these annoying men that I live with. And, you know, there's dairy, there's gluten, there's egg, there's soy. It's your main building blocks of food. So you've rattled off some great substitutes there. I mean, when someone's got allergies or restrictions, is it a case of just going out and learning the specific ones for them? Are there good resources for finding good substitutions that don't cost the earth a rule of thumb?
I think there is some really good resources now. And I think that's the power of social media, is you do have a lot of creators who are more familiar with substitutes, even far more familiar than me, that can give that sort of advice. Even a lot of vegan Instagrams I love, because they often teach you about substitutes to meat or dairy that are actually cheaper. So I would say that there's a lot of great creators online, and I feel a bit sad for a lot of people with those sorts of allergies, because often, you know, you have those expensive substitutes and they are really priced up. So I try my best when I'm providing substitutes that are gluten-free or vegan, dairy-free or egg-free, for them to be as affordable, if not more affordable, than the thing that it's substituting. Because I do find that often those recipes that are gluten-free or allergy-specific can be quite pricey. I don't think that it has to be like that, but I do think some of the recipes are designed in that way. And then, of course, you're sold an influx of products that are really expensive for those specific allergies, which is a shame.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's funny that, isn't it? It's the sort of quote-unquote natural alternatives are often also a more affordable alternative. When someone is trying to, because I am not a spreadsheet girly.
Me either.
So when someone's thinking cost per serve, and they're trying to figure out ways to feed a bunch of people for less money, is there a way to start thinking about that, a mindset that helps, or tips and tricks you've got for thinking about it without a spreadsheet?
I think in terms of bringing down the price in terms of cost per serve, it's looking at building, and we talked about that in the last podcast as well, building a staple pantry and knowing some really good strategies and ways to pull that price down.
Hit us with the staple pantry again, because that was so good.
Yeah. So the staple pantry is I like kind of treat it like a wardrobe. For example, a staple wardrobe, you've got your like black pants and your nude pants, whatever you like. For me, it's kind of building a pantry that you love, looking at maybe three grains that you love that are affordable. So one type of rice, you don't need 20 rices, that is nice, but it's okay to just have one. One rice, one pasta, maybe another sort of starch that you like. We always have potatoes. You've got two or three spices. And again, yes, more is nicer sometimes, but we're building a staple pantry and that's okay. And then maybe a couple of things like a can of coconut milk and tinned tomatoes. And depending on what you enjoy eating, that's going to change people's staple pantry. It could look completely different to mine. And I always have those things. And that's where I start all of my recipes from. So you'll even see across the book a lot of the ingredients. I would love to actually count how many different ingredients I use because I doubt it's many, to be honest. I think there's a lot of overlap in the ingredients that I use because they're built off the staple pantry that I've built, which is using relatively inexpensive ingredients in New Zealand. So yeah, you have your staple pantry and then you go in, you can see what's on sale, you can see what's in season, and then you build a dish based on that. But I think having the staples is a really good place to start. And also understanding, and again, I think this is one of the things I've really tried to do with the book, because often when I would open a cookbook, I would feel like I couldn't change anything. I would have to go to the supermarket and get everything specific. And maybe they use a spice, but I'm never going to use it again for a year until I recreate the recipe. So I've tried my best to provide flexibility so people can use their staple pantry. And if you prefer, you know, rice to pasta, you can cook that dish with rice instead of pasta. It doesn't matter. I think flexibility is an important thing when you want to bring that cost down per serving. And that's what I hope that this book kind of encourages people to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing I think that gets talked about a lot, and I've been guilty of this myself, I've said this before, is that often if you're trying to save money, you will spend time instead. And I do think sometimes that's true. I don't think it's as true as I thought it was.
Yeah.
How time intensive do you think it needs to be to cook cheaper? Like, do you have to do everything from scratch?
I feel so strongly about this because I think often, and even I will get a couple of comments like this on my Instagram, which is like, you know, why don't you do this from scratch or milk a cow? Or so I'm like, I don't have time, people. So I think time is money. There's a lot of families where both parents are working and we don't have much time. So it's so important when you're writing a recipe that's affordable to take into consideration the time that's spent because time is money. And I think there's certain things where actually it doesn't take much more time to do it from scratch if it's the right recipe. So chili oil is a great example. It is so much cheaper. And if you're like me, I put it on everything. So if I was buying it from the store, I would chew through the money. So I make my own chili oil. I won't make my own mayonnaise because I don't want to emulsify eggs with oil and get stressed out when it doesn't work. So there's things that you can choose. Maybe you buy the mayonnaise. Maybe you make the chili oil. Again, a bread is a great example. There's some bread recipes that are really intensive. And then there's others that are really fast to do. So I have a bread recipe in the book, which is like 5 minutes of kneading. You chuck it in the hot water cupboard and then it's going to be baked. So I think often we think that you have to sacrifice time in order to save money, but I don't think that that's the case with the right recipe. But then again, sometimes things you want to buy because that's, you don't have the time. So yeah, it's a balancing act.
And I think that's a really good thing as well, is like the realistic approach you take to things. And you've said a lot. I mean, we've been following each other for yonks.
Yeah, I know.
So I've got some of your key phrases down.
I love it.
But, you know, you talk about wanting people to feel proud, not pressured.
Yeah.
In terms of their cooking, and that things don't have to be Instagram perfect. And I love that you post pictures of food that you're like, this tasted really good. Don't know if it's very Instagrammable. I'm like, that looks like something I would eat, you know?
Exactly.
And do you think it's important to sort of bring it back down to that of like, do what you can?
Oh, 100%. And I think that's part of why I made my Instagram page, why I started doing videos like this, was because I always wanted to, but I would go on Instagram and I'd actually feel bad about myself and the food that I was cooking. Like it wasn't good enough. Like I wasn't doing a good enough job. And I think, unfortunately, we go online and it can be about food, it can be about fashion, about beauty, about your home, about parenting, about whatever. We're consistently being fed messages, even if it's subconscious, that what we're doing isn't good enough. That's the worst thing for somebody to feel, especially now when we're in a cost of living crisis, everything is expensive. I don't want anyone ever to go on my page and feel like what they're doing isn't enough. So if anything, I just want people to feel more proud about what they're doing, proud about what they're cooking. It's a really tough time for people. And I love that people send me their photos of their food. Sometimes the cake is a bit burnt and they'll have a laugh with me about it. Or sometimes the cookies didn't work out 100%. But I think it's such an important thing that I help people feel proud about what they're doing, because I think there's so many messages. And even if it's not intentional, I think a lot of people feel a lot of pressure to make everything perfect.
I think that's been one of the great joys, actually, of being my oldest is now old enough to start cooking in the kitchen with me, which is really fun. He's actually super into it. He likes the making more than the eating. He will help me make the muffins and then he doesn't want to eat them. It's the younger one who's all about eating the muffins.
I love it.
But my oldest will be like, hey, mum, can we make muffins? And I'm like, cool, yep, done. Oh, hey, they're ready. Do you want one? No.
Yeah. He just wants to create.
4-year-olds, man, I'll keep you on your toes. So we made pancakes on the weekend. And because I am making them with a 4-year-old, and there's also the 18-month-old rocking around the place and doing his thing and being a terrorist, you know, a couple of them got burnt. And so my oldest turns to me and he's like, Mama, I don't want that one. That one is burned. I'm like, whatever, man, I'll eat it. It's cool.
Exactly.
And it like totally takes off the pressure cooking with kids, because it's like you have those low expectations from the start. And I feel like actually it makes cooking so much more fun, just in general.
Oh, for sure. You've got to enjoy it. And even creating recipes as well, you learn to laugh about the fails and the flops and all of that. And yeah, I just think it doesn't need to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect. It's about doing our best in this economy, especially, and putting food on the table. We should feel proud about ourselves. That's such an important feeling. And even we did that with the photography in this book. It is not fancy. We made the book. Like, we own the book. It's only us that made it. We put it together, my partner and I together. And the photography, I said to him, no styling. Like, I don't want anything to look any different from how we would actually eat it if we weren't going to photograph it. So that was super important to me. But yeah, I understand why people feel more pressure now, because we open our phones and we're constantly inundated with just content that a lot of it's unrealistic. So yeah, I think it's important just to remind ourselves that that's not real life, and food is food. It's to be eaten. Doesn't really matter what
it
looks like.
And enjoyed.
And even if it's a bit weird, like, it's okay. You know, I think we just put so much pressure on ourselves. And that's also one of the reasons why I wanted to launch this book around Christmas, was because I feel like, at least from what I've observed of even my parents growing up, the pressure that people feel when Christmas comes around financially, but also in terms of showing up in a specific way, cooking a specific meal, making sure it's all perfect. The house has to be immaculate. Like, you know, I didn't want anyone to feel that pressure. So yeah, the book is just meant to be quite relaxed and easy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'd say you've nailed it then.
Thank you.
It's so good. And then in terms of, I think another thing that I'd like to talk to you about as well is the, something I hear a lot is that cheap food can't be food that's good for you. What do you make of that?
It's a tricky one, actually, because I think absolutely cheap food can be good for you. And I think a lot of cuisines and cultures have been producing food that's, you know, affordable and absolutely nutritious and incredible. I'm definitely not a nutritionist. I've never claimed to be one. But I think for me, on the other side, though, what I will say is that a lot of the ingredients or food products that are healthy are becoming quite expensive. So I think it's also important to acknowledge that fruit and veg is super pricey. Even when you try to shop seasonally, it's still limit expensive. Same as some produce, some protein, as well as some dairy. So I think that there is challenges there in terms of trying to cook cheaply and healthily. I think it can be done, but also it's that other part of it, which is that I do think, unfortunately, the price of some healthy ingredients are quite expensive at the moment, which is really, really disappointing.
Yeah. And I think it comes back to there's a bit of a money theory that I like to use in all sorts of areas, but it's particularly for budgeting, is save money on the things you don't care about and spend more on the things you do care about. And, you know, there are sometimes people can do things that might look outwardly silly to be prioritizing their money on that or too expensive, but they're making that work because they have saved quite a lot in another area that people consider a necessity.
Yeah.
So there are ways you can do that. And I saw that approach a bit, actually, through your book. When you've got things like the $1.50 loaf, that can also be repurposed as the base of a pizza or scones and things. And I look at that and I'm like, that's such a cheap base that you can then add in other things that are maybe a bit more expensive again, but you've saved so much there. Was that a deliberate strategy?
Oh, absolutely. We've made the bases more affordable and then people can add what they want to it. And also, you know, the recipes are flexible. So if you do have more of a budget and you want to throw whatever you want on it, expensive cheese, go for it. Like, I think it's fantastic. But yeah, we try to keep some bases affordable, and then we might spend a little bit more on a particular protein or a particular veg. Or, I mean, my partner is Italian. We're always going to have very nice cheese in the house, and it's just something I can't take away from him. So I think it's a
balance.
Speaking
of necessities.
Yeah, that's a necessity. That's a necessity. So I think, like, there's a balance there, and it's different for everyone and every family and every situation. But absolutely, we've tried to make some bases that are affordable, and then you can spruce it up with whatever you have. And that might look different week on week, or also depending on the family as well, what you like. I love to have a steak every maybe couple of weeks, and that's just what we like. But we save a lot of money in other ways. And I mean, for example, we barely go out to eat.
Yeah.
So we also save money in that way. And I think it's just a balance depending on the family and also your situation and everything, where you want to spend money and where you want to save. It's different for everyone.
Yeah, yeah. And I was talking to someone else about this actually the other day. Would love your thoughts on it. And that there's often a feeling of, you know, that I think when we're talking about the cost of living crisis, there is a risk that we talk about it so much that it sort of becomes this overwhelming idea in our heads, and it becomes like a boogeyman leaning over you and you feel a bit paralyzed. And it can, while there is a real issue there, it can also divorce from reality and feel bigger and sort of take away that moment of like, what can I do to still live a good life within this circumstance, right? And so I think the idea of finding good food, good recipes, that can actually be so empowering from a sort of a wider perspective too, in terms of having friends round and having that community build and that social life of having people over and hosting rather than going to a restaurant. So many of these recipes that you've got, it would be cheaper for me to have people round to my house and feed other people than it would be for me to go to a restaurant and just be paying for like myself and my husband.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. This is 100% how I feel. And I think as well, I mean, I was asked this question a while ago. Somebody asked me, oh, what's your favorite thing to make? And I said, this lemon cake, it's, you know, $5 or something. I don't know how much.
You're incredibly viral lemon cake.
My very viral lemon cake. And the person said, no, but if you could spend all of the money in the world, like everything, you could buy whatever ingredients you want, what would you make? And I said, that is it. This is how we cook. This is how we eat. It's, yes, it's a considering money and everything, but this is just how we cook and how we eat. We love to cook and eat this way. And I don't see it as a restrictive thing, this way that we cook. We just really enjoy it. We enjoy using ingredients that are in season. We enjoy strategizing and finding ways to create things that are a little bit more affordable, but also we're not compromising on flavor or taste. I really strongly feel that when I'm making a recipe, like for example, I do this cheap versus expensive series on my page, and never do I ever feel like I compromise on the flavor or the quality with the cheap ones. That's never.
Also what you were saying there as well, when you do the cheap versus expensive, love that series. I do think there's a real, And we are culturally sort of pushed into it. It is a narrative that you pick up lots of different places that expensive must mean better. Yeah. If you pay more, you get more. And sometimes true, oftentimes not.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
when you've been doing the cheap versus expensive, are there ones that have surprised you? Is there a certain way it tends to go? Like, do you prefer the cheap versus expensive? Which one most often?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, it's funny because often the cheaper one turns out healthier. And people always say this to me, like, oh, well, the cheaper one's way healthier. Like the cheesecake, for example, which I much preferred, the cheap cheesecake, like really, really preferred it. It had yogurt in it and it was much, much healthier, much lighter. So I found that as an interesting finding from doing those experiments. But all of them surprised me in the sense that I pick dishes that I think would be hard to make cheap. Like that's what I go after. So chocolate cake, I can't imagine making that cheaply. Or cheesecake is just cream cheese, which is insanely expensive at the moment. And then I try to challenge myself. And I really enjoy that series because from a chefing perspective, it kind of scratches an itch in my brain. And it's really fun and creative. But they always surprise me because the cheap ones turn out just as good, if not better. And they tend to be a bit healthier. And I love that. But yeah, I think both recipes are always great, but I don't believe in this sort of expensive is always better. I think that's absolutely not true. The word cheap, I got a lot of like questions about that by people that I know. Why would you say cheap? Like cheap is a bit of a negative word. It's got negative connotations. Maybe use affordable or maybe use another word.
I like the word cheap.
I love the word cheap, but I feel like sometimes people have negative connotations around the word.
A little bit of projection there, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I really push on that. I think I love to make things as cheap as possible, and I don't think you need to compromise on flavor or anything like that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of then, do you have any sort of cheap and clever swaps that most people don't think of?
I mean, I've got those classic ones that we've talked about, like the oil instead of the butter, the like replacing apple with egg, I think is quite a smart substitute. It works with basically any baking. Also, I think it's not only about like swapping things out, but bulking things up. So there's a really good recipe in the book. It's a meatball recipe. And we've cut the meat by half and we use bread that's soaked in water. It's like quite an Italian, like it's a very classical Italian way of making meatballs. Yeah. You soak dried bread in butter, not butter, that would be expensive. you soak dried bread in water. And then you squeeze out all of the water. It kind of creates this like bread sponge. And then you add that to mince and you basically cut the price of your meatballs in half, sometimes more than half. So I think it's not only about substitutes, like, you know, one for one. I think also you can bulk things up. And that's probably my favorite little strategy at the moment is dried bread, because also you use all the offcuts and they're normally the ones that go in the bin. So that's another thing that I'm really tough on with myself is food waste. I try to throw out as little food as possible.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's quite funny. I posted something the other day and people were like, well, how would that even save money? Because I posted, what was it? About having 1 week per month of a use it up week, if you can.
Yeah.
All of this comes with it, if you can. And people were like, but how would that even save money? I was like, because there's so much food wastage. Most of us do have huge amounts of food wastage.
Absolutely.
And even though I do that, I still have food wastage. And it actually really does cut back on things. Do you think people underestimate little... I always think the little tips and tricks get ignored because people feel like I must need a bigger thing, a silver bullet.
Oh, absolutely. And I completely agree about the food waste and having a week like that, because often one of the ways that we've managed to save money is to push out the shop. Like the longer you can push that out, because every time you go in, you're going to spend more money than you think. So for us, if we push out the shop, we use up what we have. 100% is a fantastic way to save money. And I think a lot of people are looking for that big thing that's going to help them save heaps of money. But I often think it's the little daily decisions that we make. And I think that's kind of maybe a little bit less fashionable, but the small decisions that we take every day, the small substitutes we make in our cooking that do add up, and you do save money in the end.
You mentioned before about, you know, the idea of having chocolate cake that's cheaper. And yeah, that is wild how much those ingredients can be. And that was one of the reasons why I looked at your brownie and thought, that's really clever, because you used, was it cocoa and grated pear?
Yes.
To create that same like really lovely fudgy consistency. And that is on my list. I'm going to be trying that.
Awesome.
Let you know how we go. But, you know, when you're trying to come up with these sort of creative workarounds, how long does it take you? Because that's pretty creative to me.
Yeah. Baking and pastry, I don't know what it is. My brain like just it just works that way. And I find it kind of, it's a challenge, but also I find it in some ways quite easy sometimes to find substitutes and to make good pastry recipes. I think it's probably that I was a pastry chef. So I've got the sort of skills behind that. But also, I don't know what it is. I just think like cake is the language that I speak and I can make a good recipe. The savory ones are more of a challenge. Often I'll have to recreate a recipe multiple times. Things won't go as well. But my partner's a very good chef, so he helps me with those recipes, thank goodness.
Well, go on then. Have you ever had a real kitchen disaster?
Oh my goodness. So many. Oh, let me just think. I've had so many, like literally in the last week, probably.
I love it.
I tried to do like this kind of custard, eggless, like milkless, like just everything. The like custard with nothing. I took everything away and tried to replace everything. That was a disaster.
You're like, here's your water soup.
Yeah. It's literally like, it was like gelatinous, like water. So that wasn't good. There's been no recipe yet for that. I really want to do a custard like that. So there's been some disasters and, you know, things don't, for me, often I just burn things. Like I just leave the stove and I burn everything. And like the number of times that I've had to stop filming a video, and I often show my mistakes, but this one is so common that if I did it in every video, I think people would get irritated. I burn the pan. I have to take the thing out of the pan, wash the pan, put it back in the pan. That's like every second video. I burn everything. So
you'd be like Jennifer Lawrence falling over at the awards ceremonies. She did it too often. They thought that she was faking it.
I know. I know. Really. But even my partner said to me last week, he was like, because I always just do something stupid in every video. He's like, it's just, you can just do it. Like, you just do so many of these things. He was meaning it nicely, so naturally, you know. Just pick one.
You're just an idiot. It's part of your brand. Great. And you're like, thanks.
No, really. But he means it in a really beautiful, lovely, loving way.
Yeah.
But I always do something. I have to often cut, like, a couple out because otherwise it will just be all bloopers.
Can we get, like, an end of the week blooper reel or something?
I should.
That'd be
fun.
I should,
really. It would be really fun. Maybe I will.
I'd be into that.
There's so much footage, so I probably can do it already.
Is there anything? I mean, one thing I really loved is the sort of the cost per treat thing that you were doing with a lot of the baking. And I think especially like, again, it colors my thinking, right? Because I'm feeding a family. And so I'm often like looking at this stuff. I'm like, that's so smart because lunchbox treats, they're expensive.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all these little individually wrapped treats and they're expensive. So if you can bake and chop it up yourself, brilliant. Do you have a fave on those that you would go to over and over again?
The lunchbox tree?
Yeah.
The lemon cake.
Yeah, we're back to lemon cake.
It's so good. It's so good. I love the lemon cake. I also love the cheap chocolate cookies that I did. You can put like a square of dark chocolate in if you want, but they're so fudgy and chocolatey that you can not even put any chocolate chips in and they're great. And that was sort of the point of that recipe. So that one or just the lemon cake. I love that lemon cake so much. So I was so stoked when it went so well online.
Yeah, love it. I love it. It's quite funny. I actually went to a meeting with someone the other day and they were like, oh, I made this lemon cake.
Yeah.
This really happened.
Oh my
gosh. Went to a meeting with someone. They were like, I made a lemon cake. I saw it online and I think it's really good. I was like, Alice Taylor's lemon cake? She was like, yeah.
Oh my God.
Seriously, that happened.
That makes me so happy.
It's just out there in the wild.
That's just insane to me that people, like even someone sent me a photo of a coffee cake and they'd made it in like Iceland. I was like, Iceland? Like what is going on? It's so cool to me like that people are making the cakes and the food all around the world. I just find that so insane and like so cool. And also a lot of people all around the world talking about similar experiences with their own cost of living crisis. So I just think it's just so wonderful that people are finding the recipes useful everywhere.
One of the reasons I think your recipes are resonating so much and with people all over the world is that it is actually really hard to feed yourself, your family, whoever. In New Zealand and also all around the world, there is genuinely, there's such a problem with food prices all over the place. And I know you're really passionate about the wider issue as well. So I'd love to dig into that a bit. I mean, as you're sort of trying to cost out these recipes, are there any places that surprise you that are A, really expensive or B, even getting worse?
For me, it's some of these staples. Like we grew up with butter being a staple. Mince being a staple.
Mm. Mince has gone up heaps.
Yeah, certain veg being a staple. And it's just, I just don't understand it. Like, I just think it's absolutely extortionate. Like, one of the reasons why my page has grown so much is because there's this massive problem. People are really needing these cost-effective recipes. And I think there's like a, I'm so happy that my page has grown, but obviously that's just really upsetting that it's becoming really, really, really hard for people to feed themselves. I I just think it's unbelievable, the price of some things. And you can feel it even when you go into the supermarket. Like, it might not be about a specific ingredient, but you can feel the energy in the room. People are feeling anxious about going to the checkout. It shouldn't be this hard to feed a family, you know? It just doesn't seem right to me. It seems wrong. And I think I was so focused on New Zealand, and I still am so focused on New Zealand, but also around the world, people are talking to me about the challenges that they're having. And I get a lot of messages from people, and they tell me about their experience and what they're going through and what they're struggling with food cost. And it's pretty upsetting, a lot of these messages. I just think it's completely wrong. It shouldn't be this expensive for people to feed themselves. It feels like everything's becoming a challenge. A fruit and veggies section is challenging in certain ways, and then you go to meat and that's a different challenge, and it's difficult for a lot of people right now. Yeah.
Where do you think that line is in terms of, you know, people doing things for themselves, learning cheaper recipes, shopping seasonally and all that, and then also acknowledging it being a genuinely tough time? Where do you think that line is, and what can we be doing about it?
Yeah, I mean, that's always been something I've consistently thought about on my page. And this is the reason why I did the interviews with politicians, because it felt wrong to tell people ways to save money without addressing the fact that I actually think there's a bigger issue that needs to be addressed, which is not how we're going to cut back on the price of, you know, the dairy that we buy as a household, or the cost of the cake that we want to make for our kid's birthday. But it's actually that there's a bigger problem here, which is that food is too expensive. And I believe that there's issues with the systems that are put in place. I mean, it shouldn't be this expensive. And so it was really important for me to talk to politicians. And I hope, my big hope is that people won't just accept that this is what it is, that food should be this expensive, and or that's the way it is. You know, we live in this world and food is expensive, and okay, we can save money here and there. I think we need to consistently be putting pressure on the situation, which is that something needs to be done at a higher level to address the fact that it's becoming really difficult, and it is difficult for families to feed themselves. I just don't think that that's right. So I'm not sure exactly where the line is. I try my best to kind of keep my page as empowering as possible, and that's me trying to equip people with skills that I've maybe learned in a kitchen on how to save money, but there's some bigger problems that need to be fixed. And, you know, again, that's why I always say, if you're doing your best, you're doing your best. Amazing work, because it's expensive. And yeah, I'm very passionate about it. It's a significant problem. And I see it from what I've heard from people that follow me all around the world. They're experiencing their own challenges as well. So yeah, it's just not right.
Do you hear any of the answers or solutions that you would want to hear? Or do you think the wider issue and the real problem behind it is being ignored?
In terms of New Zealand, we've heard a lot about competition, increasing competition. I think there's two parts to it, which is bringing the price of food down. So the ways that you can bring the price of food down, I don't know, people have talked about competition. And then there's also giving people more money to spend on food is the other side that I think is probably talked about a little bit less. In terms of the solutions presented, I think I agree, like, yeah, we need more competition. But, and I always say this, until I see the price of food come down or more money in my pocket, then I'll be satisfied and everyone will be satisfied. But we have a problem. And until we see those things be resolved in some way, and I appreciate it's a complicated issue, that's going to be the real test. Is when and Kiwi and people know, you know, if the price of food comes down, or if there's more money in people's pockets, that's the two ways that I see this problem being fixed. How you do it, I don't know. I'm not a politician, and I have no idea. I really don't. But I think what I will try to do in my role is to sort of continue to talk about it and say that it's not right, and equip people with what I could, the knowledge that I've learned. That's kind of what I can do and my power.
I think what you're saying there, though, is really important. And it's the controlling what you can control and the doing what you can do, which you are very clearly also doing yourself, in terms of you're not just, you know, feeding your household in an affordable way. You're also showing other people how to do that, which is something that you can control. You can be like, well, here's the solution that I've got. Yeah. Here is the knowledge that I've got. and I will share it with you. But then there are also obviously other wider things that will need to happen. And I think what you said before about you don't want people to just accept it as, oh, this is how it is. And that's something that I think is very dangerous and does happen a lot, that, you know, you see people get upset about things and say, this is terrible for maybe a year or so, and then it settles down and that's normal. And I don't think it needs to be normal. And I think we can keep pushing on it and keep saying, no, this needs dealing with. You can't just say, oh, well, here we are now. But people run out of steam, right? I mean, how do you push on it? Is it sort of just talking publicly? Do you have those conversations with other people strategically? Like, how do you keep raising the issue in order to try and keep that conversation going as well?
It's using my platform and talking to people like you about it. I worry that people will start to accept the cost of living crisis as sort of normal. And I really, really don't want that to happen. People are in a situation. How can I help them save money? That's my number one goal every week, is to give them good recipes, to make them feel good when they come on my page, instead of feel not good about themselves. But when I do have the opportunity to talk about it in more depth, it's to make sure that I highlight that there's a bigger problem. It's not just about you and how you can save money, that there's problems that need to be addressed as well.
Yeah. Well, okay then. If there was sort of one big takeaway, bearing in mind we've all got very overloaded brains and maybe we're only going to take away one thing from today. If there's only one thing people took away from this conversation about eating well without breaking the budget, what would you want that to be?
I'm going to give two things. I'm sorry.
Cheating, but I'll allow it.
I think from a practical perspective, build a staple pantry. Go home, have a look, write down your five favorite dishes you love to cook, figure out the commonalities and build a sort of staple pantry that you can really rely on. That would be my first sort of practical tip. I think that's a really good place to start. And then from sort of another perspective, it's just to, I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. So I just want people to lift the bit of pressure off themselves, feel proud about what they're putting on the table. You're doing a great job. It's really tough times. Don't put as much pressure on yourself to make everything a certain way or perfect or scrutinize yourself, because it is really tough times. And especially for me, even a year ago before I, or just over a year ago before I started posting on Instagram, I felt like I was always beating myself up for how I was cooking, or that it wasn't good enough, or I could have done a better job here or there. The moment I lifted pressure off myself, I felt so much better. So I just think, yeah, put less pressure on yourself. It's challenging times for a lot of people, but if you're putting food on the table, that's an amazing job. And yeah, that's kind of the last thing I'd probably leave people with.
I love that. I love that so much. All right, Alice Taylor, where can people find you and, of course, the amazing new cookbook?
So I'm Alice Taylor Eats on basically everything. I'm sort of mainly on Instagram, but now expanding to the other pages. So that's my handle. And the book is on my website, alicetaylooreats.com. The book will be on sale there.
Thank you so much, mate.
Thank you.
So lovely having you on. Now, if this episode was helpful to you, first of all, hit subscribe to Making Sense wherever you're listening. Apple, Spotify, YouTube, we're on all the places. And of course, send it to a friend as well, so we can all get better with money and food together. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.